Ladies and gentlemen, ghouls and gals, welcome to the One Dark Fright podcast. My name is Tim Waverla, and on this episode, we are packing up the car with escape in mind, forgetting classes, leaving books behind, and we're going to have a good time. That's right, we are heading to the beach for everyone's favorite time of the year, fall break. And if you've never heard of it, you're not alone. But today we are hacking our way through 1984's The Mutilator. It certainly will be a good time. We've got plenty to discuss and dissect on this episode. Before we get into it, allow me to introduce my two favorite fall breakers. First up is none other than Ainsley Pompey. How are you, Ainsley?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. I have one question for you from the outset. Did you pack your battle axe?
You know, I packed the Chaka mask or whatever. Perfect. It's called. Yeah. I got that with me today.
It's either that or the sweaters.
Yes.
Take one, leave the other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And last but certainly not least is none other than Rebecca Kittner. How are you, Rebecca?
Oh, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Fall break actually kind of makes a little bit of sense. We've got spring break, summer break, winter break.
No fall break.
So why not fall break?
I'm with him. I mean, I would have liked a fall break when I was in school.
Do they consider like Thanksgiving break fall break?
Yeah.
A few days off around the holiday and
just nobody calls it that.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I'm going to start.
Yeah. We're going to start a trend. It's going to be Thanksgiving break is now fall break. Mm-hmm. And though I don't remember how many days off we got for fall, quote unquote, fall break, because I feel like it was probably just Thursday, Friday.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I remember in college, especially, like I never went home for Thanksgiving because mm-hmm. I was like, I'm not driving 4.5 hours home to go for Thanksgiving when I had like finals starting soon and all right. that. So I wouldn't, mm-hmm. I would never go home for Thanksgiving because it wasn't enough time off. So I don't even know if we had Friday, but who has time to remember those things?
So we should have a fall break.
Yeah.
They deserve it. Well, before we enter into the fray, let's air out some personal history with the film, and I'll start with you, Ainsley. When did you first see The Mutilator, aka Fall Break, and what did you think of it?
I mean, I think it was only within the last like 6 months that I watched it. I liked it fine. I think I liked it more this second. Actually, I ended up watching it several months ago when I watched it, and then I watched it once through, and then I was like, I better watch this again because I was kind of, I don't know, I was doing some other things while I was watching it. And then I watched it again and I was like, yeah, okay, I can get behind this one. It's fun. There's not a whole lot in the way of a plot.
No.
But the kills I thought were fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And what about you, Rebecca?
I think the first time I saw this was within the last couple of years. And I liked it. I thought it was ridiculous. And maybe part of it was the song, but I was just like, well, I like this movie. This is great. But it had a lot to do with the kills. And I like Pam. I'm sure we'll get into that, but I like Pam. So I was like, oh, I like this movie. It's ridiculous. The more you watch it, the more you're like, this really is ridiculous. And there is not a whole lot going on besides the kills.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I'm okay with that. I still like the movie. And like I said, maybe it has to do with the song and that you hear it constantly. And I'm like, oh, fall break. What about you, Tim?
It was a couple of years ago. I remember seeing the art, like the box art before and not quite mm-hmm. sure what it was going to be and being kind of intrigued by it, but then watching it and wasn't quite sure if it was a competent movie at first. No offense to Buddy Cooper and company, but like you said, Ainsley, it takes a couple of watches to really kind of dig it mm-hmm. because it's hard to pay attention to it sometimes because just like there's nothing happening here and you just kind of look away and then you're like, okay, if I focus on this, all right, there's some fun to it. But yeah, most memorable thing about it is the kills. And I'm also a sucker for a horror movie with a regional feel. Mm-hmm. I think it was shot in North Carolina. And there's a really good making of documentary on the Arrow disc that kind of goes into some of that stuff. And it's at many times it's more fascinating than the movie is to listen to them recap kind of what it was. So that gave me a little more appreciation for it, too. But it's just a good movie, I think, to probably grab some drinks and watch with friends, because some comedy, both intentional and unintentional, that we're going to be talking about for sure.
So I have to ask then, because I had texted you both, and when I had watched it the very first time, I hadn't noticed the title scene saying fall break instead of the mutilator. And so when I watched it the second time, I was like, wait a minute, this actually is called Fall Break. Like, I thought we were joking about it being Fall Break because of the song that's in it. Yeah. So what made them decide to name a horror movie Fall Break and then be like, no, that's not good, it's the mutilator? Like, do you know why they did that?
I did read that they wanted a more generic slasher title for it.
Okay.
I don't know if it was the studio that distributed it or whoever put it out. Yeah. Unfortunately, we didn't get a Fall Break officially, but I think it's funny that the title screen pops up as Fall Break.
Yeah, I like it.
And I will forever refer to it as Fall Break. Sometimes I'm going, it's fall, you know, the movie Fall Break. I'm like, what the hell is the actual name of the movie? I forget that it's called The Mutilator, because probably since the first time we watched it, I've called it Fall Break. Between the title screen and the song, I'm like, no, it's Fall Break. Like, this movie is Fall Break. It's not The Mutilator.
They should have had the sequel be Fall Break.
There you go. The Mutilator and then Fall Break.
But we're getting The Mutilator 2, which is a bummer. All right. You guys ready to dive into it?
Yep, let's do it.
So the movie opens in the past. We don't know that because there's no title card indicating any place or time in this movie. So we're just left to guess.
Yeah.
So we begin in the kitchen of a pretty nice rustic country home. We've got Mrs. Big Ed. She does not have a name, so she's Mrs. Big Ed, is putting the finishing touches on Big Ed's birthday cake. The house looks pretty well put together, which is in stark contrast to Big Ed's condo later on. So can we safely assume that Mrs. Big Ed did the decorating?
Yes.
Yes. She kept things together.
I'm going to start out by airing a grievance against the writers here, that I have to refer to these guys as Ed and Ed. So I'm going to have to do it as Big Ed or Dad, and then Ed Jr. or just Ed.
I kept calling him Dad and not Big Ed, because I was like, I refuse to call him Big Ed. He's Dad.
So yeah, Big Ed or Dad works for me. So Mrs. Big Ed is wearing a white or light blue top with a plaid ascot and a red parachute with two leg holes for pants.
They're so big.
He's floating.
They're huge. This is writer-director Buddy Cooper's wife, who had to step into this part because the original actress, I believe, bowed out because she didn't want to be in this type of movie at the last minute. So she had to step in. So thank her for that. Unbeknownst to her, Ed Jr. is in the other room beginning his own celebration of Dad's birthday. He's taping a little sign on a rifle case that says, "Happy birthday, Daddy, all cleaned by me."
I just immediately was like, no lock on the gun cabinet. That's of
immediately
course.
What I was like. So why have the cabinet if there's no lock on the cabinet?
Exactly.
We get a quick POV of Ed Jr. and you get a little creepy music cue as Mrs. Big Ed looks around. Like, she knows her son has the potential to kill her. Like, she almost seemed a little skeeved out. I seriously question whether or not Ed Jr. knows how to clean a rifle. He has a rag and a chamois cloth.
And Windex now.
I mean, he might as well.
Some Pine Sol. Just.
And instead of disassembling the rifle, his process includes a quick wipe of the action and then a casual peek down the barrel.
Yeah.
Followed by taking aim directly at this ribbon hanging on the door.
Yes.
I almost don't hold it against him because I highly doubt Big Ed was bouncing his son on his knee and showing him how to do this. Big Ed's a man of few words. I'm not sure he's not a mute. He doesn't say much. Unlucky for Ed Jr., he's a crack shot. When he pulls that trigger and puts one round right through the knot of that bow, which passes right through the door and into Mom's back. Which we get three angles of.
Thank goodness.
Mm-hmm. Really sends the point home.
But she does a good job of falling.
She does.
Yep.
Kudos.
So we have to assume then that Big Ed keeps his rifles loaded and cocked. in that yeah. cabinet. Not only is there no lock on it, but they're ready to go.
I mean, it seems about right for him.
For him, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure enough, Big Ed arrives home just as Ed Jr. realizes that he's killed his mother.
It's not funny, but it makes me laugh.
It's a hell of a way to open a movie.
It is, yeah. actually. It is good, yeah.
But what follows is one of the more bizarre displays of shock, grief, and anger you'll ever see. As Big Ed comes in, checks to see that his wife is dead, and then attacks his son with a backhand right across the face. Mm-hmm. Like, he seems fairly certain the kid's responsible for it without even asking a question.
Yep.
Yeah, I kind of feel like they set it up in a way that you're like, oh, this kid is, that he's troubled. But as you go through the movie, he's not at all.
Nope.
No. He's a little weird.
Yeah.
But you assume he's weird because of his dad and the fact that he killed his mom when he was a kid.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
Like, not because he was weird to begin with.
You would expect him to be a bit more off center than he is mm-hmm. for the rest of the movie, for sure.
Yeah.
But it's dad that snaps from this. Yeah. It's not the kid. Big Ed drags his wife's lifeless body into his rifle room, props her up at his feet, and pours himself a glass of Jack Daniels.
My first thought was, oh, here, honey, you want a drink? We're drinking.
Happy birthday to me.
Yeah.
My favorite part of that is his shifty eyes as he's dragging her away. Like, he murdered her.
Yes.
Like, he's looking left and right. And it's pretty obvious from the get-go that he's formidable. Like, he easily drags her body in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's like she's been drained of all her blood and organs, and she's just this lifeless husk that he's pulling into the other room. And then he tapes Ed Jr.'s birthday sign onto his dead wife and then offers her a glass of Jack Daniels.
Yep.
She was thirsty.
Yeah. This is the denial part of it, right? He's like, just have a sip of this. She'll perk right up.
She'll walk it off. It's fine.
We see the camera pull back and Ed Jr. is hiding behind the wall in the next room. And we can hear police sirens approaching in the distance. How do you guys think this played out with the authorities?
Well, they have to question why Big Ed moved the body. Like, what was the purpose of that, do you think? Just for that whole scene with the note and the offering of the drink?
It's like he was trying to pretend that nothing had happened and he just pulls her into the other room, or...
Right.
He immediately goes to Creepo.
Yeah.
Almost like, I need to pull this in here. I can't have anybody seeing this.
So I would assume that... Little Ed. No, wait, what are we calling him? Ed Jr.?
Ed Jr., yeah.
Yes, I would assume that he was forthcoming about what happened since Big Ed was crazed.
And that's kind of what I thought. I said between the sign, I guess, and mm-hmm. he must have told the truth because otherwise dad's prints are all over the murder weapon.
Right, exactly.
And dad would have been in yep. jail. Though I think the kid probably would have been spending some, you know, he would have had something to do. He would have been in juvie or in doing some volunteer hour, community service hours.
It depends on his age, though, because I don't know how old he is at that point. And if they can prove that it's accidental, then they wouldn't.
They don't do anything?
Probably not. I mean, that's my criminal justice degree really working there, you there go. For there you guys.
Go. Nice.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't. Like, if he had been older and they thought it seemed a little suspicious, then maybe so. Like I said, I think he probably was just like, oh, shit, this is what happened.
All right. Fair enough.
And maybe they'd suggest counseling for him, you know, because it obviously would be traumatic.
Yeah, he'll definitely need that. Dad needs that, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Dad needs it, too. For sure. Cut to a number of years later, and we're in a very depressing bar. Very depressing.
There's some of these kind of bars in my hometown.
Well, that sounds nice.
Yeah. Little depressing small town bar where there's not a lot of people, maybe a pinball machine, mm-hmm. a pool table.
Smells like pee. That's my favorite. Mm.
Smells like pee. Yeah. It smells like smoke because it's lingering from the late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah.
The dive bar.
Yeah. The dive bar.
So we're going to meet most of our cast here. And it's a group of slasher cliches, mostly. Mm-hmm. So we are going to meet grown-up Ed Jr., who is now at least a 30-year-old college student.
As usual.
I think I read that the actor was like 28 or 29, and he looks every day of it.
Yes,
he does.
Do we have any idea of how much time has passed since the opening?
No, I mean, they kind of make it sound like they're in the middle of their college career, I feel like, right?
Yeah. I mean, the one says he's a law student again. Yeah.
Again.
Just like old Jerry.
That. Yeah. Jerry.
So I was like, all right, but he could be a law student, quote unquote, but actually be in his undergrad and call himself a law student. So my guess is they're maybe juniors.
Yeah.
21, 22.
That makes sense. Then we're going to meet Pam, who's Ed's girlfriend and whose virginity is topic 1A on everybody's mind in this movie.
Weird.
Yeah. That is followed by the opposite of celibate. We've got Mike and Linda, our fuck couple, who provide a great deal of the unintentional comedy. Mm-hmm. Mike in particular. I am thankful for one thing. Mike is rocking some Chuck Connors hair.
He is. Yes, he oh, is. It's so good.
It's a perfect contrast to that Greek god tan that he's rocking.
Yes.
It's intense.
He's got some facial features that could just cut glass.
You and I had a conversation about this when we watched it. And I was like, he's just unattractive.
Very. I agree.
Don't think he's attractive in the slightest. And Tim asked me, he goes, well, if he didn't talk the way he did and he didn't act the way he did, do you still think he would be unattractive? And I said, yeah, I still think he would be unattractive. I said, I don't know what they were thinking in terms of like, you would think that guy was supposed to be the hunky guy and the the good looking guy. I don't know who he's supposed to be attractive to, because I think he's kind of weird looking. But then, you know, obviously his character is so stupid and his acting is so bad that it plays into his looks as well. You're like, he's just
Yes.
Yep.
So it was hard to separate the two, but I was like, no, even if he was a good actor and his character wasn't dumb, it would still be unattractive.
If it was a totally different person, he would be still unattractive.
If he did a complete 180 and was a totally different person, then no, he would still be unattractive. Yeah.
I agree.
And usually slasher movies in particular are pretty good about casting good looking people, even if they're not good actors or have just no character whatsoever. But I don't know.
I don't know what they did. I mean, everybody likes different things, I guess. But like, I didn't really think anybody was too attractive in this film. I mean, Ed is not bad. And I'm talking about Big Ed. No, I'm kidding. I'm talking about younger Ed. But like everybody else, I'm just kind of like,
yeah. Yep. I'm with you. Ed Jr. Not bad, but the rest, I'm going, what is the rest of this? I don't know.
I don't know either.
That's why I was like, the Mike, I'm assuming, is supposed to be the hunky guy. And
yeah
he's just, I mean, his body is like, he's built, you know, he's like slender and fit, but not the face.
Get out of here, Mike.
Get out. Nobody wants you.
Know your role, dude. So then we're going to meet our prankster, who is Ralph, who is possibly the only person in the film with any charisma, but he's also a walking boner in a sweater.
Yes.
I hate him so much. I'm not going to lie. Again, one of those punchable faces. Like, I could even kick him in the face. It's like that much for me, where I just don't like him.
He's obnoxious.
He is.
Yeah, he's a bit much. There's one part where I'm like, all right, he's okay. You know, like every now and again, but he's a lot.
He is.
Which is very indicative of how pranksters would be in real life. They're obnoxious to the point where you just want to strangle them. And then they have that one moment where they're cool and you're like, oh, they're okay. And it almost excuses all the other bullshit you've had to put up with. But then they revert right back to being the pain in the ass who you just want to go away immediately.
Yep.
And he seems to have gone to the Arthur Fonzarelli School of Acting. He gives that arm gesture often and regularly in this movie.
Oh, I hated it.
That's his move. He found that one thing. He's like, I'm just going to keep going with this. It's working. Shortly, we'll be introduced to Ralph's lady, Sue, which I feel like is a departure. Like, the prankster very rarely has a girl.
Yeah, they're usually single.
Yeah.
Because they're the pranks. Like, that's usually one of their things. Like, oh, I'm alone. A little Eeyore. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But she's like, I feel like, has the personality of like a wet blanket. I mean, she's just so boring.
Yeah, she is. Yeah. Linda's boring. Like, there's just so many blank slates here where you're just,
I don't even never remember what Linda looks like, to be honest with you.
She looks like the female version of Mike.
Oh, okay. So angles as well.
Yeah, she's got like dirty blonde hair, and they wear the same clothing, and
they are the same.
They're basically the same people, just one is male, one is female. Because when they're making out with each other, I was like, he's wearing, I mean, we'll get there, but they're wearing basically the same stuff. I'm going, this is like, they're making out with themselves, and that's why they're attracted to each other.
Maybe. I mean, I think there are people, I mean, you know, if they're narcissists, I guess, maybe. Exactly. Yeah.
They see themselves and the other person, like, that's hot, and make out with themselves. So maybe that's what those two are.
A humorous part of the behind the scenes on this is the cast and crew, like the cast in particular, got along very well, they said, and they would hang out as a group. And even when one character was killed, they shot the movie in chronological order. Mm-hmm. And when someone would get killed off, they would stay on the set and hang out just to be with the other people, except for the guy that played Mike. They said he was frequently off sunning himself.
No!
Not surprised.
So no hanging out. He's got to work on that tan.
Oh, gosh.
I wonder how old he was, because he looked a little old, too. Yeah. It's the sun damage.
I was about to say, well, he's probably pretty leathery now. His skin looked a little leathery there, and it's probably gotten worse. Oh, Mike.
Yeah. So this group is sitting around drinking Natty Lights and Bud Heavies and playing a game of acting hot potato. They're complaining about having nothing to do over quote unquote fall break and lobbing dialogue at each other in a very staged manner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like nothing about this first interaction strikes me as natural.
No. And I know it's like a movie or whatever, but they're literally just like sitting in a line. Like, and they're not like in a you know, facing one another, really. I feel like they're just like, here we are, like facing the camera.
Yeah, it's some pretty amateurish blocking.
Right. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
It's just everyone's kind of facing one direction and just throwing dialogue back and forth at each other. Ed gets a call at the bar, and this is from his dad. And this is where Pam recounts the story of Ed accidentally killing his mother to the rest of the group, and then tacking on that it drove Big Ed crazy. Which is interesting because Pam knows that his dad snapped, but Ed Jr. doesn't really talk about that his dad like went a little nuts from this.
He refers to his dad almost as he's like, oh, he's such a funny guy. They did all these things. They had a fun time, him and his buddies. He doesn't at all let on that his dad has major drama.
Major.
Seriously. I mean, he makes no mention of it aside from him having his quote unquote spells, which he's going to mention in a minute. I mean, I'm sure this is digging deeper than the filmmakers intended, but is this some kind of weird defense mechanism for Ed Jr. where this tragic event happened and then his response to like his dad losing his mind is to chalk it up to being like, well, he has these fits or he just goes drinking. But other than that, he's fine.
Yeah, I think so.
Probably.
Yeah. It turns out that Big Head has demanded that Ed Jr. come close up the beach condo for the winter. So Big Head has seasonal homes.
A big deal.
So thinking of seasonal homes, I legit thought that the house in the beginning is a seasonal home. Like, I wasn't 100% sure. You said country home, and I was like, yeah, that actually makes sense. But I was thinking, just because of the location and him hunting, I thought that maybe it was like a cabin, like a big cabin, but a cabin in the woods, like a hunting cabin, a hunting lodge that they go to like during duck season, because it looks kind of rustic outside and it looks more almost like a cabin, but a big cabin, but a cabin almost. So I was like, oh, maybe this is like a really nice cabin that they go to during duck season. And for his birthday, they go out to the cabin and he goes hunting and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, this, I was like, and he's got a condo. Big Ed's doing all right. But then you said country home and I was like, oh, yeah, that probably makes more sense than a whole other huge cabin.
Yeah. What does Big Ed do for a living? Come on.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. Can you trophy hunt for a living?
Maybe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think people who trophy hunt are already like big game trophy hunting. Those people already have a lot of money, but like regular trophy hunters, I don't know.
Well, Well, and I mean, you can win money, right?
Right.
From this kind of, I don't know what kind of money. I'm very ignorant to these kinds of things, so I have no idea. But yeah, I don't know. We should speculate on the kind of career that Daddy Ed would have. Like, what would he do?
He's a globetrotter. He's going to the Yucatan on, on hunting trips. Like, he's all over the place.
He works at Bass Pro Shop, I think,
Yeah, that's how you get all the equipment.
Yeah. Because
he's got all the stuff.
See, it's not too far-fetched to think he's got a huge log cabin in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, so this is where he first says that his dad is having one of his spells, the kind to come in a bottle. Despite all of this, the rest of the group decides that they want to spend their fall break at Big Ed's condo.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Something to do. Of a quick note here, Ralph is constantly taking sips of Ed's beer. Every time Ed's not looking, Ralph takes his beer and either takes a sip or at the very end of the scene, he just chugs it all the way down. And it oddly plays into what I think is Ralph's ultimate goal in this movie. I think he desperately wants to have sex with Pam.
Oh, you know what? I think you're right, actually, because of some of the things that he says to her later on.
Yeah.
He's constantly teasing her, constantly putting his hands on her. Mm-hmm. And this, like, this little scene where he's sneaking sips of Ed's beer, like, is a weird reflection of that.
Yeah, I could see that.
It's a weird deal. So they all decide they're going to go, and Ed Jr. only musters a brief, "I've got a bad feeling about this." Even though he finds nothing of concern with all the crazy shit that happens from here on out until the very end of the movie.
Yeah, I know.
Everything else he writes off is perfectly normal.
Yep.
But he's got a bad feeling about this from the get-go. We're going to cut to outside the residence hall, and now the gang is in Ed Jr.'s convertible, picking up Ralph and Sue, and Ralph pulls his first very unconvincing trick. Before they get going, we hear Pam briefly say to Ed, "Don't forget our arrangement," which is just like an offhanded piece of dialogue that's going to come back later.
I only heard that on the most recent one, and I watched it, I don't know how many times, and I was like, "Don't forget about our arrangement." I don't know how I missed that with how many times I've watched this movie.
I think I missed it. Yeah, because it didn't stick out to me that she said that.
It doesn't. And I wasn't even paying attention to the movie because I was like, well, I've seen this so many times now. I'm just going to listen to it to make sure I know what's going on. And then I heard that and I was like, huh, I've watched this like four times and I haven't heard that ever. And all of a sudden I hear this line and it's like, fall break.
Ooh, fall break.
Fall break. Planting some seeds because it's going to come back later. We're going to find out what the arrangement is later.
Mm-hmm.
It has no bearing on the plot, but we're going to nonetheless be forced to reckon with it. This is where Ralph puts on his best disappointed face and says that Sue can't go because she messed up on an exam. Is he tricking them or just trying to back out? I couldn't quite figure it out.
I thought he was trying to back out.
I kind of thought he acted like he didn't want Sue to go. So maybe that goes back to like what you said, Tim, about wanting to still Ed's girl there, because I thought he seemed like, okay, let's go. Like he was like, I'm going to get in the car. Like, let's hurry up and get out of here before she comes back.
Yep. Yeah. Let's roll.
Mm-hmm.
Sue eventually appears and douses this very uncompelling ruse. And this is where we get our first taste of old Ralph's hammy acting as he throws the hands out like the Fonz and says, "Hey, give me a break." Immediately he's obnoxious and it's going to be a real treat with him for the rest of the movie. So they all get piled into the car, all dressed for some chilly beach weather. Lots of sweaters, windbreakers, plenty of plaid going on here.
Yeah.
And everybody is tucked in. All shirts are tucked in.
Yes.
Pam in particular has quite the buttoned up look.
I love the vest. Okay. I'm going to say it. When I watched it each time, I thought, I like that vest.
She's got the khaki pants, gray sweater, and then the pink winter vest.
Yep.
And like a Tam O'Shanter hat. I half expected her to be wearing penny loafers with this outfit.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very preppy group.
I love that the vest like looks, because it has the white on the edge underneath. Uh-huh. It looks like it's got ruffles on it.
It does, yeah.
Like it looks very feminine. Because like when we first watched it, I was like, does she have a puffy vest with ruffles? Like, what is going on with that vest? And then I looked at it closer and I was like, oh no, it's just white around the edge, but it looks like ruffles. I was like, it's very feminine.
Lovely is what you mean.
The word you're searching for.
Something that Ainsley would wear. Not totally something would. Rebecca would wear.
I probably have at some point, actually.
We get a brief moment here of Ed Jr.'s car not starting up, so we can rest easy knowing that that's going to come back. Mm-hmm. It does finally get started and they hit the road, leading to easily the best part of the movie, fall break.
That's right.
Car takes off and we get this jazzy song.
Really good.
It's great. It's at least a semi-serious question. Is the song better than the movie?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect.
Looked for it afterwards. I think I had texted you guys and yes. Tim had said who the singer was or whatever. I was like, well, it's not on Spotify, so I don't know.
Son of a bitch. It's so peppy.
It is.
So peppy.
It's great. And good luck getting that out of your head when the movie's over.
Oh my gosh.
It lingers.
Well, it plays throughout the whole damn movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that whole scene where they're in the bar. It's playing in the background. It's mm-hmm. So one, it's playing with the lyrics. Then it's playing as like it sounds like a game.
Yeah.
It's like an 8-bit game back there with a pinball machine game. I'm like, they're just using the melody of this song any way they can. And so they're just so I'm like, it's going to be in your head because it's the only song they use for this entire movie in various ways.
And I'm glad about it.
Yeah, I'm not mad about it. I'm okay with it.
It's like that thing you do. It just gets stuck in your head. You hear it so much that you're like, thank God the song isn't awful, that you're okay with it being in your head because it can really backfire.
Yep.
I want to do this at karaoke.
And have everyone be like, what is this?
Be like, do you have Fall Break by Peter Yellen?
Peter Yellen.
You get the right crowd and that'll play like gangbusters.
Everyone's just like, what is this? Everyone's looking around at each other like, I don't know this.
Yeah, and then you get slowly the fingers start popping and people start getting into it. It'd be good. Okay. So the credits play over this road trip montage of the group and they're openly drinking beers in the car, canoodling and playing pranks. And we make one pointless pit stop at a gas station. And I guess ostensibly it's just to tend to Ed's car, which is smoking for whatever reason.
Yeah, none of that was necessary, really.
None, including the scene we get with Ralph here, where he goes into the store to grab some beer and then complains to the clerk about age discrimination because there's a 10% senior discount and he's not old enough to get the discount. And this is where, like you said, Rebecca, where he says he's a law student, so he ought to know.
Right. Mm.
And he offers to buy 2 6-packs if the clerk will give him the discount and they'll both benefit. Unless this clerk owns the store, how is he benefiting from this deal?
He's not. And I also thought it was wild how he was talking about being discriminated against to a person of color. Like, oh, I'm not old enough. You wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah. Yep.
Completely tone deaf to who he's speaking to.
I was just supposed to say tone deaf. For whatever reason, I assumed that man owned the store.
Yeah, maybe.
And, I don't know why. Maybe because I assume that those two people in the store are the people who own the store. And that's why they're in the movie.
Oh, maybe. Yeah,
that's probably true.
They probably wanted to use the store and they were like, can we use the store? We'll let you in our movie. And they gave him a couple lines. And that's why the woman is so terrible, because they actually probably do own that store.
Hmm.
But so in my head, I think that's why I think, oh, yeah, he is the owner. So, yeah, sure. He could give him a 10% discount because he's the owner. Why not?
I like it.
It works better for the scene.
It's a theory that works, right?
Mm-hmm. The scene only leads to both Ralph and the clerk claiming victory over one another once they're no longer in the space together. Yeah. And the woman comes up to the clerk and kind of insinuates that this behavior is common. Like, there's a lot of people that come in and try to pull this same
kids that do this.
Like, what?
I'm going to start, I guess, because I didn't know it was common.
I mean, if they're used to it, I guess they're ready for it.
Yeah.
The worst part of this pointless scene is that the song cuts out.
Yeah.
We need to have the song keep playing, damn it. Thankfully, they do pile back in the car and then we do get verse 2, which is wonderful. A little bit more montage. And then they finally arrive at the condo only to find it wide open.
takes closing down the beach house to a whole literal meaning, because it was open. It was open for business.
Wide open. You have to close everything.
Yeah.
We're about to see just how fucked up Ed Jr.'s life must have been being the child of an insane father.
Yeah.
Because so Ralph reaches the front door first and he doesn't look comfortable going in. So Ed takes a peek in the door and proclaims, "It's nothing, just a little mess."
It's destroyed.
It's destroyed.
Yeah.
We get an angle of the kitchen as the gang walks in. It looks like the aftermath of the fall mixer at a frat house.
Yeah, yeah. It does.
Yeah.
Like Big Ed hosted a rager.
Yeah.
Yep. I counted no less than 17 liquor bottles on the counter.
Uh-huh.
That's how you do fall break, damn it.
I mean, Big Ed knows. He knows how to party. He knows what to do.
He does. That's been his coping mechanism for how many ever years since his son killed his wife.
Yeah.
Oy. Yep. So we briefly touched on some of the acting here. And I think it bears mentioning that as a group, they're pretty awful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It comes into focus here even more. The way they interact is just so unusual. Ed starts kind of regaling the group with stories about his dad now, saying that he probably had a bunch of his drinking buddies over the condo to talk about hunting and macho stuff, which prompts Mike to grab him by the sweater and say, "Macho, huh?" And then nothing.
I thought that was so weird. Yeah, it was awkward.
So weird. I was like, what does that even mean? Why do you have to? I don't know.
The reaction was weird to it. Yeah.
Yes. The reaction was weird. Uh-huh. Like, why are you grabbing him and like lifting him up and saying that? And what? You know, I like this movie. I will say that again. But obviously, the dialogue is terrible.
Yeah. It's bad.
And that doesn't help their acting. Like, part of it is how do you make that sound good? I mean, the dude who plays Mike is terrible, but how do you even make that sound good?
You don't.
Yeah.
You don't.
Yeah.
You leave it out.
You just don't say it. You're like, you know what? I'm not going to say that. Roll the film. Let's keep going. I'm not going to do it. So there's multiple parts where I was like, I mean, the whole movie, but you think, well, they're not good actors, but at the same time, the script is garbage and they can only do so much with it.
It's not like good. They're trying to reinforce that he's the macho guy in the group.
Right.
Yeah.
He's the strong one. Like, he's the built, physically capable one in the group. So they give him this dumb line that actually doesn't lead. Like, that's not how conversations work.
No.
To just grab him and say macho, huh? And then nothing at all.
Because it doesn't go anywhere.
No, exactly.
Nope. The guy playing Mike acts like he wants people to know that he's acting.
Yes.
He's basically a blow-up sex doll in a rugby shirt.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's his role.
Yep.
But we'll put a bag over his head.
Perfect. And then the actor playing Ed Jr. has a habit of doing a voice to accentuate some of the more like macabre things that he has to deliver that he find perfectly normal. Is this another coping mechanism?
It's cringy, I think.
It is.
Well, that really was him with the dad's having another one of his spells. Like when he does the voice for that, I'm like, oh God, is this indicative of what he's going to do for the rest of the movie? And then it is, he does do it for the rest of the movie.
They all kind of latched onto one thing and just ran with it. And that was their defining characteristic.
They're flat characters. They're not very like three-dimensional, you know, there's not a whole lot below the surface.
That's what I said, like the guy that playing like Ralph, for as obnoxious as he is, he's at least mildly charismatic.
Right. Yeah. He has the most going.
Yeah. Like we actually learned that he's a law student. The other kids, we have no idea, quote unquote, kids. it's a very flat, like he's a very flat character. Mm-hmm. Just nothing to him. Ed Jr. continues filling in the gaps about Big Ed, saying that dad used to tell me that he's hunted everything but man.
I wrote that down. I was just like, what is, but then we see the boat thing later. So I'm like, okay, well, I don't know about that there, Ed, but.
I just envision him saying that line to Ed Jr., dropping a pretty decisive hint as to his intentions for his son once he becomes a man.
Yeah, I agree.
Thankfully, we have Pam to balance out Ed's complete blindness to how insane this whole thing is. Mm-hmm. She immediately notices a cup on the table that's still dripping with condensation, starts to ask some good questions. they figure that Big Ed probably wasn't there that long ago, possibly the previous night or even that morning. And she starts playing the final girl part here from the get-go. Like, she's starting to suspect these odd things.
Well, she says call the police right away, doesn't she? Yeah.
She's like, I think we should call the police. And then that's when he's like, oh, there's no police here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Of course there isn't.
Which is like, what?
Yeah, it's weird.
It's the classic slasher setup.
Yeah.
They have to put them in a location where there's no authority figure, even though we're going to get an authority figure come into this movie for no reason later.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was like, I think they were talking about that with when they did the first Friday the 13th. They needed them to be like so far away from authority that you didn't think there was going to be any hope in that regard. So like they're setting that up here as well.
Yeah.
So Pam starts thinking that the place could have been broken into, but Ed immediately says that nothing is missing.
And that made me laugh because I'm like, you literally just stepped into like 2 inches into the kitchen. You're like, nope, looks great.
You've been in one room, part of one room. Like you haven't even looked around the room and you're like, yeah, everything's fine.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, he's probably been in his dad's condo before and is like, who'd want to steal any of this stuff? So maybe that's what he's thinking. He's like, well, nobody's going to want to steal this stuff. It's fine.
I mean, he has a point.
Yeah.
He does. It's all junk.
Yeah. We're about to go into the next room and we're going to find out just how single Big Ed has been all these years since his wife died.
Yeah.
Ralph calls the gang into the next room over, which is like a den, I guess. I don't know if you can call that a living room because there's nothing living in this house. Everything's dead in the house. My favorite part of this is Mike's reaction to seeing this room with one of the funniest line deliveries in possibly the history of cinema, where he says, geez, would you look at all this shit?
Yeah, so bad.
With the stiff arms out, just you'd find better acting at a fourth grade Christmas pageant.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. It's so bad.
Give him another take or just don't let him say the line. Somebody else. Give it to somebody else.
Maybe that was like multiple takes. That was his best.
Oh, no.
Can you imagine? They were probably like, well, this is all we got. So we got to go with it.
Oh, man. The editing room must have been either full of laughter or full of alcohol because it had to have been a nightmare.
Or both.
Yeah.
It does make you wonder, though, when movies are like this, like, are they self-aware that they like know this stuff is not good? Or do they think like, this is great? We're doing great. Like, they have to know it's not good, right?
Well, whoever releases it would have to be like,
right. I think
this was like a very small production. They shot it, or the crew all stayed at Buddy Cooper's parents' hotel and all this. Like, it was a real like family, small group of things.
Yeah.
So you have to wonder, whoever's releasing this or distributing it into theaters would have to look at it and be like, this is the best you got. This is what you're giving us. And yeah, how could they not know? But maybe they're just thinking it's a slasher movie. Who cares?
That's exactly what it is, I bet. Yeah, it doesn't have to be good as long as there's killing in it.
Kills. Yeah.
Which this movie has some pretty good ones.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to get a tour of all the insane shit in this room, accompanied by a story for each of them. Numero uno is yet another mounted fish, possibly a marlin on the wall, like in House.
Yeah.
Yay.
But sadly, this one does not return to life.
No.
And the movie is worse off for it.
Yes.
But this one has that gaff hanging off of it. And it's also worth noting that this room is almost entirely foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Starting with the gaff. There's also two deer head on the wall and another mounted fish, possibly like a tuna or something. Ed Jr. remarks that his dad doesn't eat what he kills. He's a trophy hunter. And then we're treated to possibly the biggest red flag when Ralph passes around another of Big Ed's keepsakes, which is a framed picture of a mangled man Big Ed ran over with a speedboat.
Why is it framed?
Framed.
Well, is that guy dead or is he alive now?
I have the same question.
I mean, I was assuming he was dead, but...
See, and I was assuming that he was alive and that's why he had it framed, because he was like, I ran over him, but he lived to tell about it kind of thing. So it's funny, even though it isn't, but you know.
So if he was dead, he'd have him mounted on the wall probably, right?
Yeah, you're right. That's actually. True.
That's true.
The trophy hunter.
No, he's up on my wall.
Exactly.
Got that one with the speedboat.
Yeah.
Jeez. I like the whole group stares at Ed's nonchalance. That his dad ran over this person with a speedboat, and then he has to counter with an accident.
Right.
You need to clarify it a little bit more than that. Like, you need to kind of go into what happened here. What were the circumstances? I'm thinking everybody in the group would be like, well, his dad just tried to murder one of his friends.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and again, I mean, I would be following up with why is it framed? I mean, you know, it's one of those where they skim over this far too quick because there would be some follow-up questions asking why this is framed and why you have it in your trophy room. Because that's, like you said, Tim, a big red flag.
Yeah. It's possible Ed Jr. doesn't think anything of it because he himself has killed somebody on accident.
Yeah, you know, and like I had mentioned earlier, I feel like I don't get the correct feel for his character because they want to set him up sort of in the beginning to be like he's like a creepy guy. And then he's so nonchalant about all of these weird things that his dad has done and said and whatever that does he think all this is normal or is he doing kind of like what you had said, Tim, or is he just trying to like make it seem like it's normal because he's like, this is my dad. This is what I had. This is how I grew up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's kind of confusing to me in a way because I'm like, you would think just based off of the way horror movies always go that he would have some sort of, like we said, trauma or issues and he'd be the killer and he'd be doing this and that. And he doesn't do any of that. So I don't know. It's just, he's weird to me.
You would think that that's the path they would take. Like, what did this do to the kid?
Yeah.
And not a revenge story about the dad who's obviously held this grudge against his kid for all these years.
Right. And that's why I just said none of it really makes any sense to me. And then there's no explanation, really. I mean, I know the explanation is, oh, the mom died and he couldn't cope. But like, there still really isn't explanation why dad is killing these kids. Right?
Right.
No. And I mean, and why now?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
He could have killed his kid a long time ago.
It's almost played off as like he just snapped. I feel like he snapped the minute he came home and found his wife dead.
Yeah.
And then he's just been waiting till whatever time to do this.
That's why I'm confused because Ed Jr. just kind of like plays everything off. So I'm like, has he always been this crazy person or is he just now crazy or, you know, I don't know. None of it makes any sense.
Well, and I was wondering, I'm like, would Ed Jr. know all these stories? Because I feel like dad is not very warm and affectionate and telling his son all these tales of his adventures and is taking him on these adventures. Like, he's not taking Ed Jr. with him on these things. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not believing that if that's what they're trying to tell. Like, you know, when he's talking about cutting the shark open and baby sharks coming out, Ed Jr.'s not on that trip. He's not coming along. So I'm going, you know, how does he know all these stories? Because I just don't picture Big Eddie Daddy. telling Ed Jr. these stories. I just don't picture it because he doesn't talk at all. So,
well, the only thing that I can think of in regards to that is that maybe Ed Jr. was asking about these things because he was trying to connect with his dad because his dad doesn't talk, you know? So maybe a one-sided thing. And that's why he knows that stuff because he was asking him about it.
He does say in the bar that all his life, his dad's treated him like some redheaded bastard.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So, like, true. He does have that line where he says, like, his dad basically has treated him like shit. So,
yeah,
it's hard to say. I was thinking that too. Like, he's not on these trips. You know, he wasn't there when the shark got cut open.
Yeah.
It's a weird deal. Do you guys think if Big Ed lived through this, he would have taken these bodies down to the local taxidermist and gotten them hung up in his condo?
I hope.
Depends how much he snapped, how much he is out of touch with reality.
Yeah.
Because he might, if he's super, you know, we say snapped, but I mean, again, we just said he snapped the minute the mom died. He came home and found the mom dead. But I would say if he was really out of touch with reality, yeah, he probably would take him down and get him stuffed and mounted and put him in his trophy room. But otherwise, no, he might try it himself.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, give it a go. See what happens.
I could see
he has a few to practice on. He'll save his kid for last.
Yep.
Because that's his real trophy. So he'll save Ed Jr. for last. He'll try on the other ones first. See how it goes.
Try him on. Little at-home taxidermy.
Sure. Exactly. He's had so many done. He could probably figure it out.
Yeah.
He'll just wait a few years until Google gets invented and then go Google it. You know,
yep.
It's fine. Put him in the icebox until then. It's fine.
So they continue looking around the room. Ed talks about, like you said, the shark being caught and cut open, all the baby sharks coming out. He says this with a certain amount of amusement too, a lot of these bits. And then Mike motions towards the wall and asks what that is. And Ed's response is, this one's great. I beg to differ. I beg to differ on that one.
They're all like, is it though?
He says his dad and his buddies were having a drinking party. And that's how I'm going to refer to any gathering with booze now. A drinking party.
A drinking party.
Mm-hmm. Who calls it a drinking party?
Ed.
Yeah. It's perfect. It says everything it needs to say.
Uh-huh.
So the guys decided to have a contest. Let's throw pyramid sinkers through the wall. So this contest has always baffled me. And it wasn't until I listened closely on one of these previous watches that the purpose of the contest was to throw the sinker through the wall.
Oh.
Like, not just, it's supposed to try to throw it through the wall.
Could they do that?
I don't think so.
Well, that clears up what I didn't understand, because I was like, what's the point?
Yeah.
How do you know who won?
That's it.
Exactly. I thought the same thing.
I was like, there's no rules. What are, like, you're just throwing pyramid sinkers at the wall and hoping one sticks. I guess that's who wins, is the one that sticks. But so I guess the one that went furthest into the wall.
Yep. Because it's the only one that stuck there.
I think it's hard to believe, though, that only one stuck, right?
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
Unless that drinking party just got so drinky that they were like, nobody could get it in there in the right direction.
Yep.
Everybody else that throws this sinker pretty much sticks it into whatever they're throwing it at.
Yeah.
So it can't be all that difficult.
First try.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Ed says that his dad was so proud of his winning toss that he nailed a picture frame around it in the most literal of senses.
He nailed the picture frame.
There's four nails in the corners of this frame that are only like half nailed in too. Like, they're just sticking out like jagged spikes.
I noticed that. I was like, they're legit like just nails. He nailed a picture frame. Oh, Big Ed.
Big Ed is as single as any one man can get with this home.
Yes.
It's a full-on bachelor pad. Like, there's the rusted out refrigerator.
Oh, I could not get over that.
I was like, it looks like it's been sitting on the ocean floor for like years. And then he picked it up and was like, oh, I'm going to put it in my condo.
Yeah. He found that on a deep sea dive.
Yeah. Yes. I was like, what?
There's folding chairs in the living room. The couch is covered in blankets. Dead things on the wall, weapons stuck into the wall, is frame boating catastrophes, and maybe one lampshade in this whole fucking house.
That's probably made of human skin.
Yep. This is what happens when men lose their partner.
Yeah.
Like, this is what happens. It's pretty obvious that Pam isn't the only one who hasn't had sex in 20 plus years.
Yeah. I'm sure there are people who live like that, though, right?
Yeah.
There has to be.
Yeah. The next thing they inspect in the room is going to open the floodgates of discussion regarding Pam's virginity.
Mm.
Sue asks about the tribal mask hanging on the wall, and Ed says it's the mask of the Mayan rain god Shock.
Oh, okay. Whatever I called it earlier.
You were close. I think you said Chaka, which is close. Hey,
we get the point. Big Ed stole this on a hunting trip in the Yucatan. Like, that had to have been a Jeopardy clue when this movie was being written, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ed Jr. says the mask was worn by priests during ritual sacrifices of young virgins who were shot with arrows or beheaded. He again delivers this with a certain amount of indifference. Everybody else seems a little freaked out by it, but he seems to think it's perfectly normal.
Yeah.
This prompts Ralph to remark that everyone in the group is safe from sacrifice, except for Pam. These people are in their 20s, and I can't imagine anybody older than 16 being this involved in somebody else's sexuality.
Yeah, like you said, it has to be because he likes Pam.
Finally, Pam asks what was hung on the empty space on the wall behind the couch, and Ed tells her that's where one of his dad's favorite things hangs, his battle axe.
We all have a favorite battle axe, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, I cuddle mine when I sleep, too.
Yeah, that's what they're for. Pam notes that it's missing, and Ed rebuts saying sometimes Big Ed takes his toys home with him when he leaves.
Yeah, he just, you know, puts it in his bag and overnight bag and goes home with it.
Does he have like a case? People have like a case for their tennis racket. Does he have it for like this battle axe?
No, knowing Big Ed, he just throws that thing right in the back seat and he's ready to go.
Probably leaves it in the front seat in case he needs
it.
Yeah. Pam isn't buying it and she wants to report a theft. So they compromise and Ed Jr. says he'll call his dad in the morning. And if he doesn't have the axe, then he'll report it to the police. So in the middle of all this exploring the condo, we cut to the garage. We get some ominous music and we see the return of Big Ed. What would you say Big Ed's doing at this moment?
Being a creep. I mean, he's hiding, right? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is, right? He's just in waiting.
Yes, in waiting.
He's listening to them upstairs and clutching that battle axe. The pitch for this movie must have been insane. Like, it's a boy accidentally murders his mother with a hunting rifle, and then years later, his dad plans to kill him with a battle axe.
And on the cover, we're going to use the gaff instead.
Yeah. Meanwhile, it'll be used for one kill.
Uh-huh.
They were like, we can't have a battle axe on the cover. That doesn't make any sense. I mean, as slasher weapons go, it's a unique one.
It is. Yeah.
Cut back inside. This is where Mike and Linda are making out. And he's got two handfuls of her butt as they're just making out in the kitchen.
And this is when I said that they're wearing the exact same thing. They're both wearing like jeans. Burgundy tops. Like, she's got burgundy plaid, he's got the burgundy football looking, you know, the old time football,
like a jersey. rugby shirt.
Yes. There you go. Thank you. And then their hair is like the similar color, and they're just making out. I'm like, yeah, two of the same people making out together.
Again, these people are in their 20s. Who stops in the middle of the room to passionately make out? 14-year-olds, right?
Yes. Yeah. I thought that same thing. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but like, I just don't do that anymore. So maybe I need to start again.
And when you're with your friends too, not just like alone, you know, not when you're in your private space, do it around your friends. That's the real way to do it.
Yeah, that's correct.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I have to hope that maybe there was an actual scene of dialogue between those two that was supposed to happen, but it was so bad. They were like, fuck it, never mind, just make out, we'll have the scene work around you.
I feel like that's not the case, because they've just because of the line of, would you look at all this shit, they left that in. So I can't imagine that there was anything worse than that they would have taken out and just been like, just make out. No, it's probably just a make out sesh.
There's a quick bit here where Pam's lighting the fire in the condo and Ralph has to stop to ask if she needs help lighting her fire.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the first bits where he's again wanting to make an innuendo in her direction.
Mm-hmm.
Then we cut back to the garage and Big Ed is doing what many people do. He's taking a little cat nap, snuggled up with his battle axe and having sweet, sweet dreams about murdering his son in three different ways.
And as a child.
Right.
It, like, murdering a child, Ed, not now, Ed.
That's what doesn't make sense. So it's like, why the wait till now?
Yeah, like he's imagining murdering his child.
Mm-hmm.
8-year-old, 9-year-old Ed, however old he is. I'm like, so are we not supposed to connect the dots that's the dad and this is the son? Like,
Yeah, kind of like they put that in there just to be like, hey.
To throw you off? To be like, oh yeah, this is the kid and this is the dad. And like,
we know,
just put Ed Jr. now in there. Cause he knows what he looks like now. He's seen his son, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Yeah.
He knows what he looks like as a college student. He could kill him now. That's the plan. Go fantasize about that.
It's weird. It doesn't make sense.
Maybe this says more about me. I think it's a lot funnier that it's the kid
he's
doing this to.
It is. I mean,
you're
it is.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so much funnier.
It's great that it's silent, you know, mm-hmm. and you get the kid like moving back and forth in this kind of animatronic kind of way. Like, he reminds me of Chuck E. Cheese, like maybe just a Chuck E. Cheese character. So yeah, it's funnier that it's the kid, but doesn't make sense.
He's practically complicit in at least one of them. Like, he's almost putting his head back for him to cut his throat at the, for the last one.
Yeah.
First, he's choking him. Then he shoots him with the rifle. And then the last one is he very slowly and carefully slits his throat with the battle axe. We're going to find out throughout this movie that Big Ed is very indecisive when it comes to how he's going to kill somebody.
Yeah.
During all of this, we get intercut back to the gang that is sitting around the fire, drinking beer and giggling at nothing.
Yes. I was like, what the hell are you laughing about? Like, nothing is funny here.
There's no words. They don't say anything. They're just giggling.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I was wondering if they're going straight slasher here, doling out punishment for frivolous youngsters. They're just drinking beer and having a good old time. And he's thinking about murdering.
I mean, or either that or they just, you know, the dialogue was so bad. They're like, let's just laugh instead.
Just giggle.
I think they're better off. It's a better scene because of
it. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Well, and it's funny to note that Mike and Linda are not hanging out with the group here.
Of course.
It's just the other ones. So where they are.
They're still in the kitchen making out.
Yeah.
The next scene, we do cut to them leaving the condo. And it looks like it's like dusk out maybe. And they have decided to take their makeout party to the garage.
Yeah, as you do.
They head downstairs to the garage. They essentially look around to see so we can get an inventory of what's to come in this movie. They find a closet filled with fishing equipment and a row of rusty metal spikes on the wall. Big Ed has killed people long before this, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah, the guy in the boat that he ran over.
Yeah, boom.
That's where it all started. He got a taste for it. And then he was like, you know what? That was actually kind of fun and kind of easy. And so he started getting more creative.
Maybe that is true. Maybe that's why they pointed it out specifically. That was what really did him in.
His first taste of hunting man.
Yep.
Yep.
Now he wants to do it more. They find one of the pyramid sinkers and a small outboard motor. So all the foreshadowing you can handle here. During all of this, we're going to see Big Ed's crazy eyes peering at them and clutching the battle axe from inside what I assume is another little closet in the garage.
Yeah, I could never figure it where he was. He's, I'm like, where are you underground? Like, are you in like a cellar? I don't know where you are, Ed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got multiple closets in his garage.
That are all wood-based?
Slatted.
Yeah.
Things start to get a little hot and heavy, though. Mike unzips Linda's jacket with a pair of pliers, which is top 10 sexy move.
Yeah, what did he say? He's like, oh, I know what these are used for. And I was like, I have never used them for that, but that's a good idea.
Yeah, I'm going to start now.
Me too.
Break out the pliers for sexy time. You know, that's what we all do.
Uh-huh.
What we're doing now, since fall break.
So they look to take sexy time into the very same closet that Big Ed is hiding in. But fortunately or unfortunately, Pam interrupts their sesh and Big Ed has to wait a little longer for his first kill. Then we get a quick scene. Pam is putting up the top up on the convertible as Big Ed spies on her with the killer POV shot. I guess this scene is supposed to be introducing kind of the stalkerish elements of the movie with, again, more of these POV angles and whatnot. But the scene ends when Pam goes back inside. And then the POV continues down onto the beach. And then we get a shot of the lonely battle axe sitting in the closet next to the pitchfork we're going to see again later on. Is this supposed to be telling us that he went for a walk on the beach to clear his head? Like, why are we following him onto the beach?
I guess he had to get out and get some exercise because he was too cramped in that closet.
He's been stuck in there a little too long. He had to go walk around.
How long has he been in there? Just since they've arrived, you think? Or like, was he in there much, much, much before?
Maybe
that's where he slept it off after the drinking party.
That's what I was like. Maybe they drank and he grabbed his battle axe. He went and called Ed Jr. I was going to say little Ed.
Yes. That would work too.
Baby Ed. Gonna call baby Ed. And then he was like, okay, I'm going to saunter my little happy butt down here. And he grabs his battle axe and he goes and hides under there. And then he fell asleep because he was wasted.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's obviously he had come up with the plan to kill Ed. And then everybody showed up and he's like, well, now I got to hide out down here. So he's been there for a little while.
Does he have snacks, though? Do you think?
Probably not.
Mm.
He's hungry then.
That's probably why he's killing because he's so hungry. Ornery because he's hungry.
He doesn't eat what he kills. I'm curious what the hell, what he does eat.
Liquor?
I didn't see any food.
Yeah. Pure booze.
Amongst all that booze, I didn't see any food.
A liquid diet. We're going to cut to later, and now the gang is finishing their dinner. I just like this little bit of low-budget filmmaking, like the plates are all empty. Yeah. Like you don't have to actually make food. You just be like, oh, dinner's over. And they probably have the same six cans of Natty Light that they used in the earlier scene.
Yep.
Easy peasy. I did notice one thing about the decor here. So they're in like the kitchen and the curtains match the wallpaper. It's yellow and white checkered.
Nice.
They're exactly the same as the wallpaper.
And was the table sort of like a picnic table or something? Or is it just like benches? It kind of, I don't know why, but it reminded me of a weird dimly lit Pizza Hut for some reason. Like from the 90s and 80s.
It needs to have that stained glass light hanging over the table.
I'd eat there.
Yeah, why not?
Might get your head chopped off with a battle axe, but
food's good.
It's the experience. So they finish up and Mike and Linda decide that they're going to walk off their dinner and they go frolic on the beach with some very after school special music playing.
Yes.
The hell is that music?
I was just like, is this the romantic music? Because, you know, when we did, I don't know if you watched it with the subtitles on.
Yes.
So every now and again, it would put romantic music, mysterious music or something like that. And I'm like, is this romantic? I don't know. It's not what I think of when I think of romantic music. Sounds more like Reading Rainbow or something, but.
Which would make sense for them, though.
I have written later on in my notes the Reading Rainbow music. So boom.
Okay.
We're on the same page.
Yeah. You guys are in sync. Yeah.
Nice. As they walk off, we do get some more of the POV from Big Ed. So we know he's lurking.
And he sounds like he's breathing through a mask.
Yes.
Does he have on the chalk mask?
He should.
But then we cut back and we see it's in the house. But I remember the first time watching this, I'm like, he's breathing so heavy and it sounds like the classic killer breathing through a mask. I was like, does he have the chalk mask on? Because that would have been great. Because then it would have been like he's sacrificing these kids, but it didn't play out like that. Missed opportunity.
Maybe he's a smoker.
He has all the vices. Smoking, alcohol, murder.
We do have another maskless killer.
Yeah.
And one that doesn't speak, so it would almost have made more sense for him to, not even necessarily that mask, but a mask, because you think with the mask, it's usually like, well, we don't want to see his face and he won't be talking anyways. So it's kind of a weird deal. They don't really use like him being maskless to good effect.
No, not at all. They don't use him to good effect at all, really, I don't think.
No, they don't. We cut back to the condo and the rest of the gang is playing Monopoly and giving Ralph shit for being a prankster. So he enters the room with another shitting grin on his face and Sue asks what he's done. He says, you'll see. And we talked about this, but these people are just exhausting to be around, right?
Yeah, they are. They're so boring. Like, why, when you're at a drinking party, like, I mean, I'm all for playing games. I love board games and stuff, but like Monopoly, that's like an 800 hour game when you've got multiple people. It's like, what are you doing?
They could have just stayed at home for that.
They should have.
Like they were talking about how bored they were. So they're going to go to this beach condo and then play Monopoly.
Right.
And do we really think, I mean, maybe they brought it with them, but I was going to say, do we really think Big Ed has Monopoly hanging out in his condo?
No way.
So they brought it with them, most likely.
That was in the cooler underneath the beer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. They decide to take a break from the game and they're going to try to catch up with Mike and Linda. Why? Why do you want to catch up to Mike and Linda?
I don't know. I didn't get that either. I'm like, who cares? You guys know, you made so many comments, like, you know what they're doing.
You're not exactly getting witty banter from this Ken doll and his unfortunate partner.
Mm-hmm.
This scene does offer up the one single cinematic moment I can find in this movie, which is more than I can say for the rest of it. The group exits out the back of the condo through the sliding glass doors, and we get a nice angle of them going down the stairs.
Yeah.
It almost looks like they positioned it like that on purpose for a nice shot.
Yeah.
They hang on it for a little bit, too, so we can get, I was like, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Yep.
So then we're going to cut to Mike and Linda at the pool. So this is, I'm assuming, like the community pool there for whatever this place is.
I never could figure that out, actually.
Yeah, I had no idea.
It looks like a greenhouse.
Well, I said it looked like they were closing up the pool for the winter.
Yeah.
And so they had brought all the plants inside and they had covered it. And so everything was getting covered to get it prepped for winter.
You guys are originally from a warm climate and,
yeah.
and I'm not, but when the pools close, they empty them or like they don't tent it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I thought that was unusual, but maybe that's common other places.
Yeah. So Mike and Linda jauntily sneak into this tented pool like teenagers out past 10 o'clock on a school night.
Yeah.
It's a classic slasher setup. They're going for the skinny dip, but it's the rare skinny dip in a swimming pool.
Yeah, they could have used the water that was there.
That's like what I was thinking. Like, you've got the ocean right there.
Yeah.
Linda's initial reaction after switching on the lights is to take one look at the pool and say, what's wrong with the water? And Mike says, it looks like it's been loaded down with chlorine. Would anybody believe that? How do you passably say that line of dialogue?
Well, I mean, the next thing he says is my favorite.
It's wonderful.
The way he delivers it, like I was saying it out loud to myself because I was trying to get his voice correct.
Oh, gosh.
No, but I mean, the chlorine thing, like, okay, yeah, sure. But nah, I'd be like, no, this is weird.
Yeah, I'd be like, no, I'm not jumping in this milky pool.
No, gross.
It looks like blueberry milk.
Yes.
And like you said, it's tented. And I'd be like, why is it tented?
They're fumigating it.
Because you would wonder if they weren't going to drain it, like you would think it would just be not tented, like something covering it.
Right.
And, you know, so it would be weird. I don't know. I wouldn't go in it.
I think maybe Mike's been shampooing with chlorine. Some of it's seeped into his brain.
His hair would be green. Trust me, as a blonde, I've had green hair from the pool multiple times. You know, Rebecca, too.
I'm like, yep.
So the behind the scenes bit is they did dump milk into the pool to get that effect. So that's why it looks like blue milk.
Ugh.
Yeah. Linda asks if it can hurt you. And Mike says no, but it probably prevents herpes.
The way he said it probably prevents herpes. That just sounded so weird. The way he said it.
Yeah. He just spits it out and we're supposed to be like, that was a funny line or something that's supposed to charm your girl that you're trying to get naked into this pool?
His delivery and her reaction, this is a very confusing back and forth because I was like, was this a joke? You know, I mean, I'm assuming it's supposed to be a joke, but the way he delivers it, it doesn't deliver like a joke.
It's not funny.
It's not funny. And then her reaction is like, oh, I didn't know I needed to worry about that or whatever she says. It's something akin to that. So I'm like, that's the reaction you have to somebody joking about that?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's not the reaction I would have if I was about to have sex with someone who was joking about preventing herpes. It's not the reaction I would have, but.
Well, and unless they're not like monogamous, I'm like, you have had sex multiple times already, guys.
Yeah.
Like,
what?
Those have weird. I don't know. It was weird.
But again, the dialogue,
yep.
You couldn't have come up with something better there. Again, part of it is their acting, but part of it is how do you deliver that line and make it sound funny? And how do you have her reaction to it sound humorous?
Like, right.
You can't.
His delivery is like, it probably prevents herpes.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
He holds on to it. It's such a weird way of saying those words.
Oh, it's just so weird. Oh, gosh.
I love it. His delivery is so weird.
So they're about to strip down when the lights turn off and Mike blurts out, hey, where'd everybody go?
Like, I get it, but I don't get it.
Was that an ad lib? Like, what the hell?
And so this is me. I'm like, was this him trying to be funny?
Was the line, hey, who turned out the lights? And he said it wrong. And they're just like, that's fine. Keep it.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Where'd everybody go?
It could have been written as a joke or a serious line. And we'll never know because this guy delivers the line devoid of any emotion or meaning.
We have to infer what he's meaning.
He could have said, holy shit, it's the Pope. And it would have landed with a similar panache as that. The way he said that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'd be like, that tracks. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
All adds up.
Doesn't make any more or less sense than what he did say.
Yep.
So they flick the lights back on and then we get a painfully slow scene of them undressing.
Wow.
From foot level. And then they finally get in the pool And yeah, obviously the water does look funky, has nothing to do with chlorine, but it's an interesting look to have the water opaque. Like, I don't mind the look. Obviously, the reasoning for it doesn't make a lick of sense, but it's an interesting look. It's like, it's odd just to see the tops of people in a blue pool.
So was the whole point of the pool being weird colored like that was so Mike would have no idea that Ed was going to kill her, like couldn't see any of it? I'm like, I kept thinking, how big is this pool, Mike? Like, yeah. Is this like some huge Olympic sized pool that you don't realize she's being killed?
It has to be this way for the first kill to work. But I would also argue that nothing about the first kill works.
No, I don't think so.
So they just start swimming around, splashing each other and sucking face while, like I said, the Reading Rainbow music plays in the background. We cut back over to the beach now and we see a few scenes of Ed, Pam, Sue and Ralph meandering around while Big Ed breathes heavily at them.
Yes.
From behind the bushes.
Hopefully with the chalk mask.
Yes.
Ed Jr. draws a little heart with an arrow through it in the sand for Pam and her response is, does this mean that if we don't make love tonight, you'll still like me in the morning? Like, now she's bringing it up too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny how she's almost painted as like the virtuous one in this group because she's a virgin. Her senses are heightened.
Mm-hmm.
They're really playing that slasher trope.
Yes.
She's the only one who can recognize what's going on because of it. And then we cut back to the pool. So the lights go out again and we see a silhouette approaching from outside the tent. Mike flips the lights back on, but then when he returns, Linda decides it's time to play tag.
Oh, wait. Isn't this where she reads the line?
Yeah. Yeah. So the lights go out.
Lights go out. So she goes, hey, where'd everybody go? And then he goes, there's a slow echo in here or whatever.
Yep.
And I'm like, this is far too smart for Mike to think of because he's joking on the joke that he made earlier. And I was like, this is far too smart for Mike. This should have been reversed. Like, he should have said, hey, where'd everybody go? And Linda should have said, there's a slow echo in here.
Right. Yep.
They gave those lines to the wrong people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was watching that. I'm like, that's too smart. Mike would not have thought of that joke.
Nope.
Sorry, Mike.
So they are going to play either tag or some mixture of tag and like hide and go seek in a swimming pool.
Right.
Like, it's not Marco Polo. It's tag. What follows is one of the most bizarre sequences I've ever seen in a slasher. So we get a series of cuts. Linda goes under the water. Then Mike pops up from under the water in a different spot. And then he dips below the surface. And then she comes back up. Like you said, Ainsley, this pool is only so big and so deep.
Yeah.
How can you lose track of somebody who's mere feet away from you?
Yeah, and there's no one else in the pool. I mean, obviously, Ed, Big Ed, is in the pool at some point, but like, no one else is in the pool. Like, come on.
It takes a gigantic leap of faith to find any of this logical.
Yeah. Right.
But we're not even remotely close to the most unbelievable spot yet.
No.
So after a few moments of cutting back and forth, Mike takes a deep breath and heads under. And Linda decides to have a nice relaxing stretch and float around the pool, breasts to Jesus.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Yep.
And that only lasts for a few seconds before her serenity is permanently interrupted by a pair of hands reaching up from under the water and pulling her down in slow motion.
And that's it.
And that's it. That's how she dies.
Yeah.
As I'll say, and while this is happening, Mike doesn't see her floating on top of the water. He how long has he been down there? He doesn't hear anybody splashing. He doesn't.
Yeah, does she even try to like?
No,
get away?
She doesn't.
Yeah.
She just like willingly.
She's like, this is it. This is how I go.
Yeah, this is the end. And she's gone. And I'm like, there's not a whole lot of fight there from her. And, you know, he pulls her underwater. Mike comes up. There would be, even if she wasn't fighting back, you don't willingly drown. You know, it's not like you just give in and drown. Your body fights it regardless of whether or not you're fighting. So she would have been flailing to some degree and he would have seen it, heard it, something. This is the most ridiculous part of this whole movie.
It is. That's saying something.
And that is saying something.
Maybe she thought it was Mike playing some kinky game.
Maybe
pulling her down.
Yeah. Maybe. So she's like, okay, let's go with it.
See where this goes.
Did you bring the pliers?
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, things are getting weird already, so why not? So then Mike finally pops up from his underwater nap and he doesn't see her. Like, this is batshit crazy, but I still don't think we're at the most unbelievable part of this. He dips back under and we get a shot of Big Ed climbing out of the pool, toting Linda's dead body on his back. And he looks like he's naked.
Yes! Yeah. Yes.
He is. I hope he is. Yeah. He is.
Then we see him grab Mike's clothes, but we only see his legs in the shot. So at some point, he has deposited Linda's body somewhere in order to grab the clothes.
Mm-hmm. That's a good... Wait a minute. Let's just visit that. That's a really great point, because I just was focusing on that. I kept seeing his like legs and his feet. And I'm like, those legs and feet seem younger than I'm assuming Big Ed to be. I don't know why I thought that, but it didn't even occur to me that like you didn't see her body hanging or anything.
Yeah.
Did he like toss her like over to the side and that made no noise either? Yeah. Like,
I mean, it's just a tent. Maybe he just threw her through it.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And he can't toss her over the side because they're in a tent. So they would have had to like go through something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where is Linda's body?
Yeah. Where did he put her?
Where did he put her?
So then Mike finally comes up for air again. And now there's no sign of Big Ed, Linda, or the clothes.
How long was he under?
So this older man snuck into the tent, sight unseen, stripped off his clothes, slipped into the pool with these two people, snuck up and drowned one of them without creating a wake or disruptive splashing, yes. Dragged the body out of the pool, took Mike's clothes, and tiptoed out the door with Linda's body, presumably with his clothes, without being detected at all.
Yeah.
So he had three sets of clothes he had to carry out of there.
Yeah.
If you think about it, like shoes too? Did they have, I mean.
Yep. Yeah, he took the shoes.
All of it.
Oh, how is he doing that?
Yep.
Did he have a backpack with him? And he was like, let's put these clothes in this bag. I mean, I don't understand how any of that would have worked.
Mike has some serious lung capacity. He was just under.
It must have been, because there was a lot of time that would have to pass for you to gather all that stuff up.
Yes.
Or Big Ed was strategically moving. So he would like wait until Mike went back underwater. Well, he wasn't running though. He was walking, wasn't he? I was going to say, ran and got the clothes, ran back. And then, so every time Mike would go underwater, he'd like skitter and go do something else and then skitter and go
move
back.
A piece of clothing at a time.
Yep.
But no, because he was not running in those scenes. He was slowly walking.
Pretty calm for someone who's lost his shit. It's pretty calm. Yeah. I just love that he's stripped down too.
Yeah, well, you can't get your clothes wet. It's cold out there. You can't get... He's only got one set of clothes.
Gotta stay warm.
Self-preservation.
He's so far gone, I would fully buy him just killing these kids nude, like the killer in 10 to midnight.
Yeah, that would have actually probably made the movie better if he had been just naked the whole time.
Yeah.
I think that would have been great.
Just add more what the fuckness to it. Why not?
Yeah.
This kill might as well be science fiction. I mean, I'm here to say there is no way for this scene to work.
None. No.
Oh.
Maybe this is going to happen in the Mutilator 2. They're going to have a naked killer.
So wait, when's that coming out?
It's wrapped. It's post-production. It's done. I don't know when they're actually going to show it, you know, when it's going to come out. But I've saw that it's finished shooting.
I'm curious what that's going to be about. I guess we'll see.
Yeah. I'm thinking Big Ed must have picked up some ninja tactics while he was amassing his fortune as this globetrotting trophy hunter, because throughout the rest of the movie, he's pretty ninja-like.
Yeah.
He's undetected most of the time until the very end. Mike deduces that Linda somehow got out of the pool while he was under and took his clothes and ran off. So he slowly follows this trail of discarded clothes back to the garage, which I call the G.O.D., the Garage of Doom. It's going to be the site of many deaths. So Mike spots Linda's underwear hanging off the closet doorknob. And then he gets scared by Big Ed's fishing rubbers that are hanging on the inside of the door.
For the second time, because I think that was the second time it scared.
Yep, that's right. Not again.
Yeah. Not these rubbers again. Nice.
He's another one who has to say lines about what's happening because he can't emote that or get it across with his face.
Yep.
Then he sees the other closet door swinging open, but he doesn't find Linda behind door number two. What we are treated to is unequivocally the worst acting in a horror motion picture I have ever seen. He pops the door open, expecting his naked girlfriend, and instead meets the business end of an outboard motor, the same one they were looking at earlier. So old Big Ed fires that thing up and just stands there holding that motor. Like, that sounds like a feat unto itself.
Yeah.
And Mike proceeds to slowly descend out of frame.
So good.
Twitching in pain ever so slightly.
Oh.
It's somehow overacted and underbaked.
Yeah.
Because of how long he prolongs the death by closing his eyes and pretending like he fatally stubbed his toe, as opposed to being attacked by sharp motor blades.
You know, I've not been attacked by a motor before, but you would think you would, like, wouldn't you kind of go, you'd go down, I think. I don't think you'd just continue to stand and be like, I'm taking it, I'm Mike, I'm taking his blade.
As he's just chopping him up.
Yeah.
This was their excuse to use the torso prosthetics, though. Yeah, I guarantee you they had a whole concept with how they wanted to do this. And they're like, let's get the motor. And that's probably why they do it in slow, have him do that slow too, so they could show this whole bit. But having this guy act out that death scene, the slowest death in the movie. When I see this death, I kind of assume that's where Jim Carrey got the inspiration for the shot in Ace Ventura, before he falls in the shark tank.
Yeah.
And does that little face maneuver and then falls back. Like, yeah. I just assume he saw this and said, I'm going to do something like that.
Yeah.
This is our first instance of mutilation, though.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's where they got the title from. This guy is just a mutilator.
Yeah.
It's a gory kill.
It is.
It's funny. I like it. I mean, it's so ridiculous.
Yep. It probably should be gorier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You would think that would be much more.
You would think there'd be more. You'd see like more internal organs or something. I don't know.
Yeah. More blood.
Yeah. So the final product is we see Mike's impossibly bronze torso chopped to bits. And he is slumped over on his knees. The scene ends with Big Ed dragging Linda's body into that closet and spearing her head on one of those rusty spikes like a cantaloupe. And it's Hello Halloween Curse of Michael Myers all over again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's a classic. All right. And that is where we are going to stop this conversation on 1984's The Mutilator, aka Fall Break, for now. There is so much more crazy shit to go in this. So stay tuned for Volume 2 at the end of the month, where we're going to cover the second half of the film. Until then, we hope you're enjoying the One Dark Fright podcast. Please don't forget to download, rate, review, and subscribe to the show wherever you fulfill your podcast needs. We always appreciate those 5-star reviews, so keep them coming. You can listen to the show on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and a slew of other platforms. You can also find us on our pod page, which features all of our show information and past episodes in one convenient location. That URL is www.podpage.com/1-dark-fright. And also feel free to give us a follow and say hi on social media. We promise we won't bite, and you'll be able to stay current with what's going on with the show. We can be found on Twitter and Facebook at One Dark Fright, and on Instagram at One Dark Fright Pod. For Ainsley Pompey, Rebecca Kintner, and myself, Tim Waverla, we wish you the happiest of fall breaks, and we'll see you all for Volume 2.